This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, listening to the World War II memories of one of the latest veterans to experience the magic of honor flight and a trip to the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C. In a moment, we'll hear what he had to say right after landing back home in California. But first, let's go back more than 70 years with B-17 waist gunner Jim Morris. If someone had told you that you were going to fly 24 missions in 28 days and still be alive at the end of that, would you have believed them?
No, I'd figure that somewhere along the line I wouldn't make it, but it was it kept happening, and we were pretty worn out by the time February was over, I'll tell you. And actually, a couple of the guys gave it up and just couldn't stand it, you know. And one of them was a navigator we had, and he had joined the RAF years before, and then he transferred to the Air Corps to get back. As the only time I ever saw somebody, you know, completely get unnerved, and they took him off in an ambulance, and it was very shocking to us, the rest of us. We was all tired, but then we wasn't that far quite.
Well, that's the question that occurred to me. What stopped you from breaking up that way? Was there something that you guys did together as a routine or a ritual or anything that kind of kept you focused and kept you ready for that next day and the next mission?
Well, yeah, you discuss it, and you knew that where you were going, where you'd been before, and you knew what it was like, and so you said, well, we're going to work it together and do the best we can.
One thing I think a lot of people don't understand, we're so used to the comforts of air travel today. When you're in a B-17 at 25,000 feet, it's not a pressurized cabin, and it's not exactly heated. What were the conditions like for you?
Well, they were very cold, of course, in the wintertime. They're colder, and we flew over the Alps a lot, either the Italian Alps or the French Alps or in Switzerland and so on. When you're up 25 to 26 or 1,000 feet, it would get down to 35 degrees below zero. And there was just the skin of the airplane. There wasn't any padding or anything to try to keep it that way. And when you open those windows to stick your gun out there, it was just like, boy, it was cold. And it would just, first thing it would do it is kind of cover up your goggles and stuff, and which you had to wear, all a heated suit, sheep lined leather jackets and pants and stuff. But I'll tell you what, if that heated suit ever went out, you were just Katie to the wall about getting pretty bitten cold.
I believe it, absolutely. Now, one of the things that you saw on one of your missions during that stretch of 24 and 28 days was what could happen to a B-17 and another guy in a similar position to you. And this is one of those stories that I think really kind of blows your mind, because it's hard to believe. But you saw the tail sheared off one of the B-17s?
Yes, there was a German fighter, I think it was a 109, a Messerschmitt 109, was flying out of the sky down through us, and he got hit. We knocked him down. Well, he went out of control, and he sheared off the tail of a B-17 and about 20 feet of the fuselage. And the tail gunner was locked in there because of his ammunition boxes fell in on him, and so he couldn't get out. So we watched the thing, and you could see it all the way to the ground, and it would take great swoops, it had enough tail surface and vertical stabilizer surface to kind of keep it flying and not, it was going down all the time, but it was, so anyway, as he got down close to the ground, it was very mountainous, and when it got down, we saw the thing, the air currents carry it up the hill, and then it slid down and into a bunch of trees. Well, we didn't ever see him get out, so we figured he either fell out when he first, he got cut off, or else he was still in it and probably got killed. Well, Tito's Patriots, or whatever you want to call them, brought him out to the Adriatic Sea, and the Air Sea Rescue, British Air Sea Rescue, picked him up, and he was back in our squadron the next day, or in our group. He wasn't in my squadron.
But The very next day.
And then he got a nice trip home right away because he didn't have to fly anymore.
Well, I imagine a few jaws hit the floor when they saw him walking in.
Absolutely. I mean, when we heard, heck, he's back. You know, what do you mean he's back? But it was just a slow, kind of a soaring, kind of like, eagles do or something, and just it was enough tail surface on the horizontal tailplane to keep it going, and instead of tumbling, which I thought it would do, it just swooped. So when it hit the side of that mountain, it would just slid down the mountain. Anyway, he couldn't believe it either. He said, I couldn't believe I got out of the thing alive, you know, because all the way down, he said, I'm it. I'm done, you know.
Well, that's definitely something you have to see to believe, and you saw it. Glad you didn't have to survive anything similar. You did survive the rest of your time in Europe, and as I mentioned, you had enough missions, 52 missions. Before D-Day even happened, you were back in the States. And then they said, well, we'd like you to go to the Pacific and be on a B-29 crew. And you said, no, thanks.
I didn't say no, thanks. There was nothing I could say about it. But I thought to myself, no, I really don't want to. So I said, if I have a choice, I'd like to go to the medium bombers and go down in the 25s because they stay down below the oxygen level. And you could, you know. And so I said, I've got the experience. I can fly the turrets in a 25 and so on and so forth. But anyway, I guess they decided that one of the decisions they made that I wouldn't understand is that the war was enough over that they assigned me to training gunnery students in Laredo, Texas, and then back into March Field, and that's where I was when I was discharged.
Well, and I think there's 3 children, 5 grandchildren, and 3 great-grandchildren that are thankful you didn't have to go back to any combat zones, because they wouldn't have been here if you didn't come home from the war and get married and have your family. When you look back on all this, and I know it's been a long time, but what do you think was most significant about what you and all the guys that you served with did? Why should it be remembered today, and what should we remember about it?
I think it was the difference between anything after that. It was the fact that we wanted to win the war. I mean, I don't mean that people didn't in the Vietnam War and so on and so forth, but we didn't seem to, as a nation, fight the war the same way, because there, everybody was gung-ho. I mean, back then, everybody was gung-ho, even though they suffered from it or would be restricted in their thoughts about it. They still worked together to go do it. And the infantry, they took terrible hardships and still kept going. And it was just a real pleasure to me. I mean, interesting to read Ernie Pyle's deal in the Stars and Stripes about the infantry and stuff, because it was an entirely different world than what we were living in. But I never lived in England had barracks and so on, but I lived in a tent from the time I got there until I left.
It wasn't exactly a life of luxury, but it sounds like I hear you saying that you saw what America was capable of when everybody was moving in the same direction.
It was a great effort, and it was an effort by everybody here in the States and over there, and it made you real proud that you could be a part of it. I never felt like, I don't know why I had to do this. I never felt that way. Because the thing was, when we got to Africa, there was a lieutenant colonel that was in the Air Force that briefed us on what we were up against. And he said, I'm not leaving here until this war is over. And he said, I expect you to do the same. Well, I would have stayed, but I mean, I finished my missions and they sent me home.
So that was more than 70 years ago. But now in 2015, Jim just finished another kind of mission, an honor flight to Washington, D.C. with 62 other World War II veterans. His daughter Michelle was his guardian on the flight. Here's what Jim had to say right after being greeted by a huge patriotic crowd when I asked him what he drew from that experience with Central Valley Honor Flight.
I got a view of Washington, Washington, D.C., that from still pictures, I never realized what it was really like. But it's so interesting to go the way you go back there and see one thing and it connects up to another and so on. I think the one that we really enjoyed, my daughter and I, was the World War II deal. It's very, and there were so many people there and so many kids from schools, and they were all almost like this deal, you know, because there were several buses of us, of course. It was real interesting, and that one was good. And then the Air Force was the last, Air Force one was the last one we seen. It's not a big thing, and it's not a, you know, elaborate like some of them, but it's really interesting because they got really nice, shiny things with names on them, and then they got these huge things like I don't know what the hell, they look like elephant tusks, only they go up about 100 feet in the air, and they go each way, and I kind of think it's like the Blue Angels, you know, break like that. That's kind of what it looks like. So that one we liked real well. And last night, we didn't get a chance with a group to go to the Vietnam, and so we took a cab and went there just her and I, and walked through, and that's really interesting, very interesting. And then the Korean one is, I've never even seen a picture of it, but it's just outstanding. It's a bunch of soldiers tromping across a field of like grass about that high, and water running in there, and then, of course, they're not real, but, you know, and then they got the names and stuff and different things there. But it's all a great experience, and I'm going to say this, whether it sounds like it or not, but I was kind of getting worried about our country, the way it seems to be going to me, but the way it ended up back there with the school kids and all kinds of people, and the way it was right here, I feel like we're not lost. There's more to it than what you just read and hear, you know, because I think you get the negative a lot, and this is not negative, and neither was it back there.
I know you just opened some mail on the flight home.
We did, yeah. They had mail call there. I didn't know how in the world they got any mail, you know. It was letters from here and from school kids in Woodlake and Exeter and all around, and my family and friends that I know, clear even in Oregon and so on and so forth. So it was a surprise to us all there, because we got a surprise for you. You military people were going to have mail call. And so we didn't know all of this stuff had been done ahead of time. But anyway, it was great. It was a surprise. And it showed, again, it shows the sentiment and the pride of the people. And that's, it's not us, it's them.
You took off and landed on a lot of runways like this one while you were in the Army Air Corps.
Yeah.
What did it feel like to step off of this plane and see this crowd waiting for you?
Yeah, we were looking through the window, and it was, they said there was going to be some people welcoming, but look at them. I mean, I couldn't believe this, you know. That's what I said. It buoys my feelings about America. It really does. I just want to say, I want to thank the people that are behind us, volunteer groups that do something like this, because there was other people back there that have gone and from other places, and they just felt the same way. It all fits together with how great America is.
Did it make you feel like what you did mattered a little bit?
Yeah, it sure does. You belong to something that you maybe thought was fading out. And the kids back there, there was kids from on school trips and stuff that were there, and everywhere you run into, they was shook hands and give you letters, and it just made you feel like an American. Again.
Yeah. That's Jim Morris of Exeter, California. And I also asked his daughter, Michelle Leclerc, what it was like for her to share this honor flight experience with her dad.
It really was amazing because we hadn't traveled together in years either. And then to kind of get his take on the, you know, different memorials, and then to see the people coming up to him, the little kids coming up to him, it was really amazing. And I have never been to Washington myself, so I was seeing it all for the first time. He was seeing it for the first time, so it was great to share that memory with him.
I have a feeling you probably looked at him as a hero for a while, but did this give you a new appreciation or understanding of what he did and how significant it was?
Well, he's been one that has shared his stories over the years, but it's just kind of different when you really do stand there and you're standing with all these other, you know, veterans, and you're kind of hearing their stories, and just the feeling behind it, it just kind of put a whole different emphasis on it.
Is there one moment that stands out for you over the last few days that's going to be the one that sticks with you?
Well, I think when we first got to the World War II Memorial and the bagpipes were playing, and then these little kids were coming up, and there was a little girl that gave them this letter, and you know, we took pictures with her, and I read it, and it was just a sweet letter, and he was kind of really surprised by all of that. I think, you know, he was going to see the memorials and all that, but then all the people that came up and shook his hand, and young high school boys and stuff, they, you know, came and talked to him, and then there was a young girl from China, and she spoke to him for the longest time, and she said, China loves you. China loves you. Please, please know that. And she was just here studying abroad. It was some things like that that I think were just, I don't know, so unexpected and so memorable and amazing.
That's Michelle Leclerc, who wouldn't be here if her dad, Jim Morris, didn't survive 52 B-17 missions during World War II. What memories they will share. Just a little snapshot of the power of honor flight. And I hope that made an impression on you. I hope you'll get involved wherever you're listening today. Let the veterans in your life know about this chance at a free trip to see their memorial. And maybe it motivates you a little bit. I hope you'll get involved wherever you're listening today and make sure that the veterans in your life know about this chance at a free trip to see their memorial. You can find out more at hometownheroesradio.com. Thanks so much for listening today. I'm Paul Effler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.